Testing, 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 second test, testing, testing.
Same thing again.
You ready? Okay, I don't know what I said the first time, so I'll just say hello and how do you do, and I hope you're feeling fine.
This is Betty Trunell speaking for the Decatur Public Library. Today we are continuing our oral history of Millikan University with our guest, Mrs. Elsie McNabb, that most people know as Edith. In 1962, she retired from Millikan University as Associate Professor of Speech Emeritus. Well, Edith, what did you do following your retirement?
Why don't you ask a short question instead of a long one? Well, the first thing I did was to work at the Decatur Public Library as a community information person. Then they started the Rolling Prairie Library System. And I went there as a film director. And then I went to Richland Community College, where I am now.
I heard that you left Rolling Prairie libraries when they became a little bit too mechanized. Is that right?
Well, they got the computers. Now, I'm not against computers. But I couldn't operate anything about a computer. So I went to a place where I felt I knew more what was going on.
Well, your retirement has been anything but dull. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of your retirement activities later. But let's go back to Millikan for a bit. You were at Millikan for a number of years. How did you happen to come here?
Well, my husband had we were both teaching at Ohio Wesleyan University in Delaware, Ohio. My husband left to work on his doctorate. Well, naturally, his place was no longer open when he'd finished. And so we were both looking for a place, and we came to Millikan.
Well, how did it work out? Do you find your years at Millikan especially rewarding?
Very rewarding. My husband liked Millikan very much. Miss McCaslin was head of the English department when we came here. She became a very close friend. And after we'd been here for two or three years, then there was a speech department made, and Mac chaired the speech department.
And you went into teaching, too.
Yes, not right away. I guess you call it teaching. I instructed children in dramatics in the School of Music because they had so many children enrolled there. Then later, I went to the college and taught in the speech department.
Well, Edith, I've heard from a number of sources that you enjoy attempting creative approaches to teaching. What were some of these?
How much time do you have for me, I wonder?
All night.
All night? Well, that's wonderful. Well, yes. I think that we need to think of new and better ways in our teaching. Not to settle back into what has been done. It may be good, in which case, keep it there. But let's try to improve it. But some way there's something very, I can't think of any word except abhorrent, and that isn't quite the word I want to use, but a very disagreeable word to me that would describe the satisfaction that you're completely satisfied with everything, that there's nothing else that needs to be done. That, to me, is just not very helpful.
Well, I'm sure that you never did reach that point of being completely satisfied because you were always trying something new. For example, the radio programs, the taped radio programs.
Yes, that was the first thing we did after we got our professional radio equipment. WSOY, the professional staff at WSOY, their engineers, installed our equipment for us, and we had just top equipment. So we recorded the music provided by the School of Music. Great diversity. I think we had something like 32 or 38 programs, something like that, all different. And we put those on tape and circulated those to the radio stations throughout Central Illinois. That was our first effort of that sort.
That was the series called Music in the Making?
Music in the Making is what we called it.
And I believe it was produced, as you said previously, for the National Association of Educational Broadcasters.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. It makes us sound more important, of course, if I say that.
Well, it really was important.
It was. It was a little hard to get the money and the approval for that. The tapes had to be sent in, and you had to go through all that. But I was particularly pleased that the commercial radio stations were so receptive to this sort of thing.
Well, that was a real triumph. And then I believe I've heard that since you were able to program so successfully on radio, you moved on to other things, for example, television.
Well, where else would you move in the area of communication if you didn't move to television in that particular period? In 1955, I'm talking about 1955,
yes, right.
You'd understand that, wouldn't you?
Right.
Milliken produced the first telecourse for college credit on a commercial station in the state of Illinois. Now, we're kind of pleased.
Well, I think you should be.
That was on the local station, Channel 17. Professor Talbot, an art teacher, taught an art course, and I think the greatest triumph that we had about that was that a number of the saloons tuned in on it periodically. There was something fascinating to them about that, and in general, the community thought very well of the idea. And production-wise, the station did a fine job. I was very delighted with the, so many times if it is a program such as that where no one's paying anyone any money, stations are not as careful in their production as they should be, but the local station was just as though they had been, were receiving $1,000 to do it. Then we wanted to continue. We felt it was successful. We wanted to continue, but the local station felt they couldn't. So there was another station, the one Channel 3 in Champaign, so we saw what Channel 3 would do. And we had a very satisfactory response from Channel 3, and we programmed there for 8.5 years.
Well, that was a real success.
That was, but if you had been with me and had to go there every Saturday, that was the day before tapes, remember?
Right.
You drive there every Saturday.
All kind of weather.
Winter and summer. We did, as I said, three of them a year. I taught the first one, Techniques of Television Production, and the enrollment was excellent. It was scattered all over, and we were permitted to go to the station. I didn't think we'd ever get this, but we were permitted to go to the station for a workshop. Can't you imagine what a mess we were in that station when they were trying to do one thing and we were trying to show something as people about the television? But anyway, the station was, the station profited.
Good.
Their viewing audience doubled within 1 year. We had the 9:30 to 10 spot. And, of course, we got...
9:30 to 10 in the morning.
In the morning, that's right. And, of course, we got such wonderful support from the station. It was a funny thing. The sales department thought that time could be sold, so they went out and sold the time. And when Mr. Meyer, the owner of the station, heard about it, he said, "No way, no way are you selling that time. That hour has been promised to Milliken as long as they want it." And that was the end of that.
Well, that was fine support.
That was fine support. And the program manager also, I still get a telephone call from him every now and then, He said we should ask for anything we wanted. I think he hadn't the slightest idea how much we might ask for, but that's what we said. So we programmed around the calendar 3 courses, as I said, per year for 8.5 years. And my retirement ended the programming.
Well, that was a real experience for you and a great success. Now, the people who took this course, did they have an examination?
Yes, they do. Now, that's what some people don't understand. They think this course of television, they just sit and look at television and that's all there is to it. No, it isn't. In some of the courses, they had to come to the campus 3 times during the semester in order to have instruction there and also to take tests and things of that sort. But in all cases, the students came to the campus at the close and took a final examination. And I had one triumph, one real triumph about that. We, in one course, this was the only time it happened, the same instructor was teaching a course at Millikan and also teaching the telecourse at the same time during the same semester. And she was giving a final exam on the campus, so the television people came in and took the same exam as the other people, and they made a better score than the ones who had been on the campus all the time. So that is a partial answer to those who say that it's all froth, there's no learning about it.
And it was really a controlled experiment. So
it really was.
You could take a lot of satisfaction in that.
And we did. And we told everybody about her from Dan to Beersheba. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure you should. Edith, I know you couldn't have done this by yourself. You had some help from administration or professors. How did the other faculty people feel?
Well, I think I would have to say first, if I may, that the greatest help came from my husband, that he would have to put up with all kinds of irregular hours, dinner not on time, and all the rest of it. But that he did. So I'll have to give him first credit. Then Dr. Mickle, who succeeded my husband as chairman of the speech department, was very cooperative.
I know he thinks very highly of your work.
Well, that's nice. Don't disillusion him. Just let him think that. President McKay saw the possibilities, and he gave consistent, firm support all of the time. And that was not easy to do, because it was at a time when this was new. No one had proven that it could be done or that it was effective. But President McKay felt that he saw the image or saw the rightness of it. And so he gave it his firm, consistent support as long as we did it. And also Hank Gill, the business manager, he always supported it. And, well, I remember, this doesn't have a thing to do with the question you're asking, but you don't mind if I...
Well, we want to hear it.
Well, I remember one time that I'd spoken to Hank and said that really I didn't feel that I was as entirely competent to direct all of this as I would like to be, and that I needed, I thought, more technical training. His reply was, well, get it, which I did. I attended a lab course at Michigan State, which I found to be very helpful. It was very practical.
Well, that shows, too, that the university really did appreciate what you were doing.
I think they did.
I believe you had at least one student who was, young man who gave you skillful assistance.
Yes, we would never dare omit the name of David Williams. He was he had had a great deal of technical training, but he was taking some regular courses at Millikan. And David, had it not been for David, regardless of all the other types of support, we never would have been able to get this thing off the ground because, you know, equipment goes wrong from time to time, and somebody has to know what to do about it. And Dave Williams would come at the university. If I'd give him a key, he'd come after midnight. He'd come any time that was necessary to keep that equipment functioning as it should be. Of course, in the meantime, I had forgotten to mention that, we had gotten a two-camera closed-circuit operation on the campus along with our radio equipment.
And all of that equipment does require someone who really knows what he's doing to keep it functioning.
They cause more harm than could possibly be repaired if they didn't know.
Did he train students to work the cameras?
No.
He did the work.
Or who do you mean to repair the cameras?
No, to operate the cameras.
No, I didn't.
You did all that.
That's right. Yeah. That was my function.
Well, you really had a full schedule yourself.
Oh, it was fun. It was fun. There never was a dull moment, but there was always a challenge.
Who planned the programs? Who decided what was going to be aired? Did the university decide that, or did you decide it? Or
well, I think that's an embarrassing question because I think I'm going to.
You
have
were
to
the one who did that. Well, this was a one-woman show. We can see.
Well, no, not actually. I always conferred, and I had to have the assistance of a great many people. Mm-hmm. But if you do learn in something like this that there's one method that won't work, and that is to go around and ask everybody what they'd like, because you get as many different answers as you have people, and by the time you get all through with that, you don't have time to do what you're supposed to be doing.
And, of course, you did have the training and the zeal and the ideas so that I can see how that worked out. And I'm glad it worked out so well. Now, we know, of course, that your students, in the end, are the benefactors of everything that's gone on. And I won't ask you names because I know it's hard to pick out one student above others, but in general, would you like to say anything about the quality of the students you had?
Well, in general, I certainly felt that the students were definitely superior. At least they were superior in their commitment. How about their IQs? I don't know. They seem very smart to me. But most of the students who were enrolled in broadcasting were alert and eager, cooperative, and it was a real joy to work with them. In fact, that's what teaching is all about, you know. If you didn't have the students, there wouldn't be any delight in teaching, so that we're always grateful. I think all teachers will agree with me that to think about those students who were so cooperative and so superior is one of the great rewards, and to get letters from some of them is even greater.
That's right. And I hear that you haven't given up teaching. You're still teaching a driver education review class for senior citizens.
Well, that's one of my projects at Richland. I have the three projects going at Richland, and one of them is the driving, which prepares the senior citizens to take their test, you know, every 3 years after you have to take a test. So I teach that. We have some excellent volunteers who teach also. But I do teach that, and truthfully, now I'm telling you true, if somebody would say to me, now you may do anything you want to for the rest of the time, just anything, I'd say, all right, I'll give up everything else I'm doing except the teaching, and I will teach driver review morning and afternoon, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It is so very rewarding because when they call and say, I passed, then the instructor passes too, and the instructor doesn't pass unless they do. That's the hard part.
It's a real thrill.
It's a real thrill when they pass, and a real disappointment when they don't.
Because a driver's license at that time means a passport to a fuller life. We know that.
We do know that.
So that I know they appreciate it. Well, Edith, it's been a real pleasure to share these reminiscences with you, or to have you share them with us.
I had fun.
And we thank you very much for your memoirs of your work at Milliken. And I'm glad that it isn't all memoirs, because you're still continuing your dedication to teaching and to other activities. And we congratulate you for that.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Edith McNabb, Associate Professor Emeritus of Milliken University, and this is Betty Trunell for the Decatur Public Library.